Generations of ambitious young Britons went out to the colonies in search of adventures and fortunes. As explorers, administrators, scientists, merchants, missionaries, teachers, doctors, and soldiers. They encountered alien societies and cultures and languages, and at first exploited the people they met. Slavery and lesser forms of forced labour were common in many parts of the empire, and the British were often ruthless in crushing threats to their power and in suppressing traditions and customs that offended or challenged them. At the same time, however, an intellectual minority among the British began to study these new societies sympathetically and open-mindedly. In doing so, they helped to develop a missionary tradition and such new disciplines as anthropology and comparative religion. When Britain took over the colonies of the defeated Central Powers at the end of the First World War, it seemed at a glance more powerful than ever before. Beneath an impressive facade, however, the imperial edifice was already beginning to crumble. Doubts about their justification to rule other peoples by force, combined with anti-colonial movements, created political pressure for independence. This pressure, already strong between the world wars, became overwhelming once Britain had been weakened by its exhausting role in the Second World War. The empire then fell with astonishing speed. Between 1945 and 1965, all but a tiny handful of Britain's colonies won self-government. The effects of the empire and of its ending are, however, still felt throughout the world today. Well, it's important to emphasize right at the beginning that the empire was not purpose-built, and that at different times, very different motives impelled the British acquisition of foreign territories. It certainly isn't the case that at a certain point in history, a British government said, "We shall now attempt to create a colonial empire." In the 16th century, the 1500s, English monarchs and merchants looked enviously at Spain's gold and silver-rich possessions in the New World. And those were the years in which privateers like Sir Francis Drake, with the approval of Queen Elizabeth I, plundered Spanish treasure ships and raided Spain's colonies in the Caribbean. England's victory over the Spanish Armada in 1588 marked its maturing as a naval power and created the possibility that Britain too could create overseas colonies. Some of England's early colonizing ventures were for profit, others were for religious sanctuary. For example, the Virginia settlers from 1607, the founders of Jamestown, were very disappointed not to find gold and silver. But then they discovered that tobacco could also be a highly profitable export crop, and it was the foundation of Virginia's prosperity. In the 1600s, even more important than Virginia and Maryland were the West Indies, where sugar plantations created an extremely valuable commodity. England developed an extremely sweet tooth, which it still has right up to the present. And the British government regarded the West Indies as more important than the colonies which became the foundations of the United States a little bit later on. The motive for the founding of some colonies was religious. The Plymouth Bay Colony and the Massachusetts Bay Colony in the 1620s and 30s were attempts to create ideal Puritan settlements. And when William Penn, a little bit later in the century, created Pennsylvania, it was a combination of the quest for religious liberty and the quest for good relations with the Native Americans and for business opportunities. Now, the encounter between the Europeans and the Native Americans was a biological catastrophe, especially from the Native Americans' point of view. The diseases which they caught from the English and from the Spanish were far more lethal to them than the diseases which they gave to the Europeans. And perhaps as many as 90% of the people living before Columbus's first contact died over the ensuing century. It was also a very, very complicated biological exchange. A great many crops never previously seen in Europe came from the New World. Tobacco, potatoes, maize and tomatoes. On the other hand, all sorts of species went in the other direction. It wasn't until Columbus that horses and cattle appeared for the very first time in the Americas. And when on a Western movie you see the Indian on his horse, it's important to remember that that's a cultural adaptation, that the horse frontier moved west more quickly than the human frontier, and that the Indians themselves were adapting to a novel species brought into the New World by the Europeans. A wide array of domesticated crops, particularly the grain crops,